All right, as you may have already found your way to the book of Ruth this evening, and chapter number 4, the little book of Ruth. I'll remind you, we preached through this book on a Sunday morning series about 3 years ago, and now on Sunday nights, as we're making our way through Old Testament history, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, I committed to spending just a few weeks on Ruth. So we've been tackling a chapter a week. And really, that's, you got to, for me anyway, you got to keep your foot down on the gas, the pedal to the metal, to do a chapter a week. But the Lord willing, we'll deal with something else next week. But then this month has 5 Sundays, so we'll have 5th Sunday service, which means no evening service. And then Brother Bob will be with us in November. But after that, we're going to jump right into 1 Samuel. So I might encourage you. Sometimes I just feel like I waste my time saying this, but I hope that's not true. I might encourage you to go ahead and reread 1 Samuel and start making your way back through that narrative, as it will be, that's where our Sunday nights, unless the Lord changes our mind, that's where we're going to be on Sunday nights for the next little while anyway. But tonight, let's finish up the book of Ruth by looking at chapter number 4. We just broke it up in different scenes. Chapter 1, chapter 2, 3, and now chapter 4. In verse 1, God's word reads, "Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by. And to whom he that is Boaz said, Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, Sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsmen, Naomi, that has come out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, or inform thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants, and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me, that I may know, for there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Little Hope texted me before church tonight and said, man, if that other kinsman gets Ruth instead of Boaz, it's going to be a sad story. But that's not where it ends. So verse 5, then said Boaz, What day thou buyest a field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to conform all things. A man plucked off his right shoe, or plucked off his shoe, and gave it to his neighbor, and this was the testimony in Israel. Therefore, the kinsman said unto Boaz, Buy it for thee, so he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders, and unto all the people, Ye are witnesses this day, that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. Let thy house be like unto the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. And we'll just stop there. We'll tackle that last little bit before we leave, Lord willing, this evening. But as we've broken up the book of Ruth and looked at it in different scenes, scene one was the trip to Moab, or in the land of Moab. Scene two, or chapter two, was the fields of Boaz. Scene three, last week, we looked at the threshing floor, that strange marriage proposal from Ruth to Boaz in chapter number 3. But tonight we look at chapter 4, and it centers around the gate of the city of Bethlehem, Judah, the gate of the city of Bethlehem, Judah. Now, we studied this book, and now it is starting to reach its climactic end, its high point, if you will. All that has transpired until now, Elimelech taking his family away from Israel into the land of Moab. There he dies, both the sons die. Naomi, left alone, returns. However, you will remember that Ruth cleaves to her mother-in-law. Ruth will not leave, and so she returns back to the land of Israel, back to Bethlehem with Naomi. And that beautiful, beautiful little story, chapter 2, Ruth says, I'm going to go out today and see if I can find a little bit of corn for us to have. And if you'll remember, there's a little bit, I think, a little bit of a sanctified sarcasm in what the author says, when he says that she just happened to end up in the field of Boaz, but we know that wasn't by chance. It was the divine providence of God. It wasn't coincidence, but it was providence that she ended up in the field of Boaz, I should say, in the field of Boaz. And then, if I may, and this is just, again, a little bit of my own imagination, I think there's sparks immediately between Ruth and Boaz. I think there's a mutual attraction there. I think it stems deeper than just a physical attraction of appearance. I think Boaz is a godly man. I think Ruth is a godly woman. I think she has shown and has been exhibited that she is a God-fearing woman, converted from paganism of Moab to the worship of Yahweh or Jehovah God. And now she goes in chapter 3, and you remember me saying last week, I don't know why on earth she did it this way, but she did. She goes in the middle of the night, lays down at the feet of Boaz, and essentially says, will you marry me? And Boaz agrees to it. And you got to love how chapter number 3 closes. She had returned, Ruth returned early that morning to Naomi. And chapter 3 closes with Naomi's advice. Naomi says to Ruth, just sit down, sit still, be quiet, and just watch God work. Now, that's my summary of what it is, but that's exactly what Naomi says. Sit still, my daughter, until you see how the matter will fall. For the man, and I said to you, this is one of my favorite verses, the man will not be in rest until he hath finished the thing this day. And then so later on that very morning, Boaz doesn't waste any time about this. Later on that very day, remember last week she left while it was still dark and went home to Naomi. And this chapter 4 begins with Boaz immediately going up to the gate of the city. And you just need to know this, and I've mentioned this to you in the past, and this is the gate of the city is where they conducted business. For us, it would be like town hall or the courthouse. That may seem strange to us, but in their culture, that's where they conducted business, contracts were agreed upon, purchasing, selling, these things. It was done at the gate of the city. And as the narrative here plays out, often there would be witnesses called, and they would be eyewitnesses. You have to realize this goes back beyond handwritten contracts and things like that. Before that, just word of mouth, testimony by others. And so here anyway, Boaz goes to the gate of the city. He's got his mind set. And I really think it's not just his mind, but it is his heart. I think he cares for her. I think as you read the narrative, and as I've now been through it twice in some depth, I think he has a real love for her, a real affection for her, and he wants to marry her. I really think that he wants to marry her. So he goes to the gate of the city because there's a problem, remember? There's an issue. He wants to marry her, but being a godly man and doing things, quote, by the book, if you will, Boaz says, there's a kinsman who is of nearer kin than I am. And so he has legal right to redeem the property of Elimelech and to marry Ruth. And so that has to be dealt with. And that's exactly what we find in verse number 1. Boaz goes to the gate, he sits down, and he waits for this kinsman to come by, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake. He waits for him to come by, and I don't mean any disrespect, but our King James language doesn't fully hold such a one. Hold such a one. And how do you like to be walking down the street and somebody hollers, "Hold such a one"? Stop. But really, and this is rich, really, when you get down into the narrative itself, and we'll develop this a little bit more later, he doesn't name him. The human author, and of course we know the Holy Spirit inspired this, but the human author leaves his name off the inspired page. In fact, the Hebrew, if we were to try to get at the heart of the Hebrew language, not the verbatim word for word, but if we were to try to get at the heart of what the Hebrew language is saying, when he says, "Ho, such a one," he says, "Hey, so-and-so." And that's what the author wants us to know. He doesn't want the man's name mentioned. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that the man refuses to serve and do the role of a kinsman, and because of that, his name's left out of the story. And so Boaz here says, and I mean really, you study it out if you want to, he really says to him, "Hey, Mr. So-and-so, come over here and sit down." Today we say, you know, I do this a lot because I can't, what's-his-face, right? What's-his-face? That's Boaz says to what's-his-face, "You come over here and sit down." And so he, and they begin the conversation. Boaz gathers 10 men of the city to serve as witnesses to this. And they sit down together. And Boaz says to him, "Look, if you want to serve as the kinsman redeemer, do it. But if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. But you have first right. You have first legal right." And the word redeem, and we tried to focus tonight's song service in particular, redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. The word redeem just means to buy back, to literally purchase, to buy back from bondage, or to ransom, to liberate, to rescue. And this is what Boaz is urging this unnamed man to do, to redeem or to ransom or to purchase what would belong to Naomi or Elimelech, depending on how you want to look at it, and also to marry Ruth and be a part of her redemption. And I'm going to ask you to look back with me to Deuteronomy 25, and this will help make a little bit of sense to you. This is the law of the kinsman, the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 25. We looked at this some time back, but it won't hurt us to look at it again. And you'll just see what plays out at the city gate has its roots right here in Deuteronomy 25. Now, it needs to be understood, and I want to say this, I want to be sure not to forget this, that neither Boaz or Mr. So-and-so, whoever he is, the unnamed kinsman, nearer kinsman, neither one of them are legally required to marry Ruth. They are not legally required because they're not an immediate brother to Mahlon. So they don't do this out of force. They do this out of compassion. That's really what Boaz does this out of compassion. But in particular, the law, there's what is the letter of the law and then the spirit of the law. And the spirit of the law is, if it's your family, then you should try to redeem it if it's within your power. And so Deuteronomy 25, verse 5, says, "If brethren dwell together," verse 5, "and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him the wife and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her," the work, and that is to marry and give children. "And shall be," verse 6 says, "that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel." And let me just stop right here. Shame was a huge part of this Old Testament culture. We don't think much about it in our Americanized, Western civilized world, but shame. And it was considered a shame for, especially an Israelite family, for someone's family name to be discontinued, to stop. And so it was always, and this is one of the reasons why Israelite women were so upset if their wombs were barren, because it was just a shame, really, if a woman's womb was shut up in that culture that she couldn't give birth, especially if she could not give birth to a son. Without a son, the family name would die, and that was considered shameful in Israel. And so this law here of the kinsman, if one man dies and he doesn't have any children, so that his name doesn't disappear in Israel, and also you have to understand that his property is attached to his name, so there's that side of it altogether. That his younger brother, if a man dies and his younger brother is supposed to marry his brother's widow, and they do what married couples do, give birth to a son, and that son would then, even though he's married to the younger brother, that son would be named after the dead brother. And the dead brother's land would go to this son. And so that all plays in to what's going on at the city gate. Now, technically, unless there is Levitical law that we don't have, and we certainly cannot make an argument out of silence, this was incumbent upon a brother relationship. And so as it transfers, there was a certain expectation, a family expectation, but there was no demand that Boaz do this. Okay? It was more of a cultural expectation that the family or a family member who was financially viable would purchase the land to keep it in the family, and if he was in the position also as well to marry the family member and to raise up seed to the dead family member's name. But if you still have your place in Deuteronomy, I'm going to go ahead and read that while we're here so that you can see how it will play out to some degree at the city gate. Now continue here in Deuteronomy 25, verse 7, says, "And if a man like not to take his brother's wife..." Now, fellas, if you've got an older brother and his wife died, I don't know how many of you'd be all that excited about marrying her, your sister-in-law. I don't know how you might feel about that, but there were some who didn't like that idea, and I can't blame them. So let me move on here. I don't want to get too much trouble. If the man like not, verse 7 says, he don't want to marry her. If the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate. You see that? This is where business is conducted. Unto the gate, unto the elders, and say, "My husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother." He won't perform the Redeemer's duty. He will not marry. He will not take me. Notice this, verse 8. "Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it..." In other words, he says, "Yeah, that's right, I don't want to marry her." And say, "I like not to take her." Notice how she is to respond in verse 9. Then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off of his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, "So shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house, and his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath his shoe loosed." That's rich stuff, ain't it? Don't you look forward to reading that part of the Bible? That's good stuff. Let's unpack it just a little bit, okay? If the man says, the younger brother says, "I don't want to marry," then she is to go to the elders of the city. And you realize this puts her in a precarious position, right? She's now a widow, and it's hard on women in this culture to survive. So it puts her in a precarious position. And besides that, this young man is not living up to the Levirate marriage. He's not living up to his duty to redeem his brother's wife. And so she calls for the elders, and she takes a shoe from off of his foot. Now that is not the same thing that takes place, or not exactly the same place, same thing that takes place. It's my fourth time speaking today, so be patient with me, okay? It's not exactly the same thing that takes place at the city gates, but it is kin to it. It is near to it. She's to take his shoe from off of his foot. The best explanation, and I've done a lot of reading to try to make sense of it, the best explanation that I can give you is that she takes the shoe off of his foot. And so in so doing, she is saying, "You're not to ever set foot on my property or on my family's property. That's the best explanation that I can give you. More than that, even in the time of Ruth, and we'll get over there into that part of it, even in the time of Ruth, it was the taking off of the shoe was an archaic practice, so there weren't real... Even the author of Ruth says, we don't even do this anymore during the time of Ruth. But you would take your shoe off, and that was it was the equivalent of a business transaction. To us, it would be like signing the deed of your house over, or signing over the title to your car, or putting your name on a mortgage, or whatever, to signing some kind of contract. The exchange of the shoe, and she'd spit in his face, and that way shame him. And that was a way of shaming him because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. But then in verse 10 there in Deuteronomy, verse 10 says, and his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. And it's beneficial to read that in different translations to get your mind around what is being said, because to us it's just as foreign as a foreign language. Really, for whatever it's worth, he's not to be called by name anymore. He's to be called Mr. Barefoot, if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty of it. Call him Mr. Barefoot. Don't call him by his name anymore. Call him Mr. He Who Don't Have Any Shoes. And in a time and a culture where they didn't own 1,000 pairs of shoes like we do, you go around barefoot, it was definitely significant that you were poor. Now, just think for me just a minute. Remember, the author here in Ruth refuses to name this nearer kinsman. Doesn't tell us who his name is. Even when Boaz calls out. Now, Boaz knows what the man's name is, right? But even in Ruth chapter 4, when Boaz is sitting at the city gate, the author just says, he called out to him and said, hey, Mr. So-and-so. I don't think it's a stretch to say that the author is making a reflection back into Deuteronomy 25, something along the lines of saying, hey, Mr. Barefoot, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Unnamed. We're not going to mention you by name because you did not. You realize then, because this man did not act, even though he wasn't bound, there was a cultural expectation, even though he's not bound necessarily to do this, because he refused to do this, the author, the human author of Ruth, just says, we're not even going to mention his name. In Deuteronomy 25, his name was not to be mentioned, and because now here he will not do this, he will not meet this role as the kinsman, we won't mention his name here either. Now, you can do whatever you want with that. That's just what my thoughts are on it. But as you know, there are three requirements of a kinsman. You have to be near of kin, you have to be willing to redeem, you have to be able to redeem. There's the three requirements. You have to be next of kin, and then you have to be willing, and you have to be able. And as we go back into Ruth now, as Boaz presents this to what's-his-face, as Boaz tells him, in fact, where it says, I thought to advertise you in verse 4, Ruth 4, verse 4, I wanted to let you know that this was going on. He is saying to him, if you want to do this, do it. Number one, you meet the first qualification. You are a kinsman. Number two, you're willing. And number three, you're able. And so the man says, yeah, I'll do that. I will do this. But then Boaz says, now hold on a minute. You need to understand all the fine print. You need to know all the details. It's not just, you're not just purchasing land that belonged to Naomi or to Elimelech. You're not just doing that, but you also have to serve as the role of the kinsman and redeem Ruth as well. And in other words, he's saying to Mr. Watch-His-Face, not only have you got to spend your money, but you also going to have to marry Ruth and raise up children. And when she gives birth to a son, that son will get that land that you were purchasing because it will remain in the family of Mahlon, the family of Elimelech. And so, originally, the unnamed kinsman says yes. But then we see this in verse number 5, then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth of Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. And so he says, then you redeem it, for I cannot redeem it. So really what it seems like here to some degree is the man is more concerned about, in other words, he don't want to spend his money to buy this land and then marry this woman, and then when she has a son, that land is going to go to that son and not to my family. It won't belong immediately to my family, but it will belong to the family of Mahlon, which was Ruth's, of course, her dead husband. So he just says, I'm not going to do it. Can I just say this? I think Boaz did like this. Yes. I think that's just exactly what he wanted. I mean, you know, for him, it didn't turn out to be his wedding day. You know what I mean? He got excited about this thing. He was thrilled. I think he was really excited. A godly man, a wise man, but I also think he was a man in love. I think he was a man that cared about Ruth and wanted to marry her. And so I think there's this huge sigh of relief from Boaz to say, okay, yes. And so in verse 7, "In this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming, concerning changing, to conform more things. A man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor." I'd love to be able to give you some deep theological answer. All I can tell you is as we look back in Deuteronomy 25, we saw the taking off of the shoe, and this is something very similar to it. It was just a sign of a contract. And so do you notice, though, in verse 7 it says, we don't even do it like this anymore. That's how they did it during that time period. But it's archaic now. Verse 7, now this was the manner in former time. They don't even do this anymore. You don't swap shoes as a business contract, if you will. We don't do that anymore. Now we do it a different way. And for whatever it's worth, I'm going to tread very carefully right here. You've got to, if you ever want to understand Old Testament narrative, you've got to step back into the text, okay? There was a time when men nor women owned 100 pair of shoes. Now, this is where I'm treading carefully. You'd have a hard time putting something up under our bed at home because my wife, like many of you, she has a few pair of shoes. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's how it is, okay? But that's not always been the case. Don't shoot me later, honey, please. I love it just the way it is. I wouldn't change it if I could. So, that's not always been the case, though, right? There was a time when you had a pair of sandals, maybe two pair of sandals. And so when you exchanged sandals with somebody, it was meaningful. To us, if you swapped off one shoe, who cares? I got 25 other pairs just like it. But during this time period, they weren't as affluent as we are today in our culture and our society, so it carried meaning to it. And so, even though during the time of the writing of Ruth they no longer did it that way, it was still a custom during that time period that there was a meaningful exchange. I know that this isn't mine or wasn't mine, but now it is. And that shows the commonality of a change, a transaction. This wasn't mine, but now it is. And so that's what they did. And I can't give you anything more than that about it. That's just, you know, you can purchase it now. You have the right to walk on it. Whatever maybe application could be made there. But verse 8 says, "Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe, and there in the presence of the 10 witnesses, they do this." Verse 9, Boaz causes the elders to serve as witnesses. Verse 9, he says to the elders, "And to all the people, your witnesses this day, I've bought all that was Elimelech's, all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover," and this is a part I think that made Boaz happy, "Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance." And the name of the dead, and here's the honorable thing, I don't want Elimelech's name or Mahlon's name to fall out of Israel. I don't want that shame to fall on that house. "So that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of his place, ye are witnesses this day." And all the people that were in the gate and all the elders said, "We're witnesses. The Lord make the woman that has come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah." And that's just a blessing. Remember Rachel and Leah? Between those two and their handmaids, they gave birth to the 12 tribes. Between Rachel and Leah and, you know, they ended up giving her handmaids, which they shouldn't, but they did. gave away their handmaids. Between them, you got the 12 tribes of Israel. So this is just a blessing. That's all they're saying. They are stamping their approval on Boaz marrying Ruth, which, and you got to step back now, God thought little of the Moabite people as they are a product of an incestuous relationship. God called Moab his washpot, but it was apparent to everyone that Ruth was an honorable woman. A Proverbs 31 woman. She is an honorable woman. And so that's apparent to everybody. And even the witnesses, the gates, the elders at the gate of the city, they all pronounce a blessing on their union. May you two be as fruitful as Leah and Rachel. May God bring grace and blessing. And the truth about it is that Ruth is such a good woman, she makes Boaz famous, more famous. Look at the close of verse number 11. Which two did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. So the elders are saying to Boaz, this woman's going to make you famous. In other words, she will be a huge blessing and a benefit to you. Let your house be like this. That's just another blessing in verse number 12. And so here, let me get this. We know, with those of us who are Bible students, we realize that Boaz is a portrait of Jesus Christ, our kinsman redeemer, who became a mortal man, a human being, so that he could be our kinsman. You had to be of relation, so he became a human like we are, so that he could redeem us. He is our kinsman. So to be that kinsman redeemer, you have to be of kin, and that's why he came. Sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body hast thou prepared. We also read, get over here in the book of Hebrews, for verily he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. So he became a kinsman, Christ did, so that he could redeem us. Was he willing? Yes, he was willing to redeem us. See, and there's a little bit of that beauty in that. Outside of that covenant of grace, it was not incumbent on Jesus to do this. He was just willing to do this. There was nobody that forced him to do this. He was willing to do this. He willingly left the halls of heaven and condescended to be born in a manger, born in a whatever it is, in a manger, laid to rest there, to sleep in the manger, to live a perfect life, to go to Calvary, to willingly. I love the conversation between Jesus and Pilate, however short that it is. Pilate says, don't you know I've got the power of life and death over you? And Jesus responds saying, don't you know you don't have any power over me at all? You wouldn't have any power over me at all except if it were given to you by my Father which is in heaven. And he makes a clear statement there. He makes it evident. He says to him, in John chapter 10, Jesus says, no man takes my life from me. No man takes it from me. I lay it down. I will lay it down to myself, and I have the power to take it up again. This commandment have I received of my Father. So not only was he a near kinsman, and not only was he willing, but he was able. Close as I could come was, he is able to deliver thee. He is able. If I could sing, I'd break out in song. I see you, brother. I know what you mean. But he is able to deliver thee. He is able. Is he not? Galatians 3, verse 13. Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, been made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. What we couldn't do for ourselves, poor, broken, and sinful, Christ has done for us by redeeming us. 1 Peter 1, verse 18, for as much as you know that you are not redeemed. Isn't that great? You weren't purchased. You weren't bought back. You weren't ransomed with corruptible things as silver and gold. See, Boaz redeemed Ruth with silver and gold. But our kinsman redeemed us with something far greater than that. As much as you know, 1 Peter 1:18, that you are not redeemed with corruptible things, as silver and gold from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. We've been bought back. We've been redeemed. We ought to be able to stand up and sing, redeemed, redeemed, how I love to proclaim it, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. We have lost it in Adam, our sin, our failure. We failed in Adam, sinned in Adam, depraved and lost in Adam, but in our kinsman redeemer, there is hope and redemption. I love this. If you will just take that thought of Christ as our kinsman and you point your mind back to chapter 3, verse 18, and see that Christ going to Calvary to purchase our redemption. You see this in chapter 3, verse 18, Naomi's words. Just sit down and see God work this out. Right? The man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. Those same words could have been spoken on the day they crucified Christ. Those same words. He will not be at rest until he have finished the thing this day. In fact, if you're in chapter 3 of Ruth, just roll back to verse 11. Chapter 3, verse 11. Listen to what Boaz says to her. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city doth know thou art a virtuous woman. In other words, I'm going to do everything you need. And that's just exactly what Jesus did in our redemption. He did everything that we need. These words that we read in chapter 3, chapter 4, they could have been spoken on the day that they crucified our kinsman. But before we finish with Ruth, let's not forget about Naomi. Let's just take a minute or two and think about poor old Naomi. Remember? Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, because I am bitter. She didn't stay bitter, she got better. Man, that'll preach right there, right? She didn't stay bitter, she got better. Why? Because of the work of the kinsman. Because of what the kinsman did, the faithfulness of Ruth and the marriage. She, verse 13 in Ruth, chapter 4. So Boaz took Ruth. She was his wife. He went in unto her. The Lord gave her conception. She bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi, you notice that? And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. Naomi no longer bitter, but because this lady who had left out with her husband, with her two sons, buried her husband, buried her two sons, comes back home. Now she's got a grandson bouncing in her lap. Now, can I talk to you grandparents just a minute? I'm going to steal what Brother Wally said. I would say I'm going to borrow it, but I'm not going to borrow it. I'm going to flat out steal it. Brother Wally said there's a reason why they call grandchildren grand. They put a little spring in your step. Right? Put a little smile on your face, a little bounce in your heart. That's how Naomi felt when she held that little grandson. They called him Obed. Now, you know this, right? But it's so rich, I can't close without telling you this. Ruth, a Moabitish woman, ends up in the genealogy of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, you follow this out. Boaz and Ruth have a son. His name's Obed. Obed has a son. His name's Jesse. Jesse has a son. In fact, Jesse has, I think, seven sons. But one of them becomes king in Israel. And his name's David. You follow this back out. And Boaz, Ruth are the great grandparents of King David. King David. Isn't that rich? I bet old Naomi never realized when she was over there standing by the graves, empty graves of her husband and her two sons. I bet it never occurred to her that she's going to be the great grandfather of Israel's greatest king. Never occurred to her. But that's how our God is. He works it out. See, there was a time there from the human side of it that the genealogy of Jesus was just gone. There was nothing. But was God crippled? Was his hands tied? No, they certainly weren't. He put Ruth and Boaz together. And so they ended up marrying, giving birth to a son. You just follow that generations out and you'll see this, that there is God's great providence in working. So how did things work out for Naomi? How did things work out for Ruth? Ruth is a story of redemption. That's what we named our little subtitle this time as we made our way through Ruth, the story of redemption. Ruth is a story of rewarded faithfulness and devotion. Ruth was a woman who found grace in the eyes of her Redeemer. I close this evening by asking you this. Have you found grace in the eyes of the kinsman Redeemer? Do you know Him and the power of His resurrection? Can you say, that's my kinsman? I don't know why we do this, but sometimes we take that song, Blessed Redeemer. We only want to sing it come communion time or certain times. But He is a blessed Redeemer, is He not? I hope that you know Him and have a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Good to have our visitors. Thank you all for coming. We start one time Wednesday, one time Sunday. Sorry to throw a loop for you. But thank you for coming anyway. So, and thank you all for coming. God bless you. Love you. Let's be dismissed.